Welcome to the second legislative forum being sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Johnson County during the 2026 Iowa legislative session. These forums are designed to give local citizens an opportunity to discuss current state legislative issues with their elected officials while the legislative session is underway. Today's forum focuses on issues related to the environment and especially water quality. My name is Kathy Wandrow, and I'm pleased to facilitate today's conversation. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Johnson County, as is our timekeeper for today, Maureen Braddock. The League is dedicated to educating voters on political and ballot issues. We encourage informed citizen participation in government. The League does take positions after considerable study of issues and acts to influence decision makers on those issues. Membership is open to all people of all genders, age 16 and older. We invite you to join us. We can use your time, your talent, and your financial support for our ongoing operations. To learn more, speak to any one of our members or reach out to us through our website or Facebook page. All Johnson County legislators were invited to participate in today's forum. Senator Driscoll had a family conflict. Senator Walls, Representative Zabner, and Representative Lawler had scheduling conflicts. Representative Hora did not respond to our invitation to participate. I'd like to introduce our legislators in attendance right now. First of all, Senator Janice Weiner, District 45. Representatives in order of seniority and then alphabetically, Dave Jacoby. Dave Jacoby, District 86, who has brought his own visual aids for the day. Amy Nielsen, District 85, and Eleanor Levin, District 89. We will start the forum with 3-minute summaries from each of our legislators on recent legislative matters of interest to them individually. Senator Janice Weiner, District 45.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you all for coming and joining us today. It's a good group. There is a lot going on. We all woke up this morning to that other news, so we can tell that there's massive distraction and destruction going on at the national level, and that's sort of the large version of what's going on at the state level. Our colleagues who are not present today on the Republican side are doing their best to distract from the things that Iowans really want us to be doing. We saw that with the end of the first legislative funnel last week, where I saw not a single bill make it through that has anything to do remotely with cleaning up our water. Saw almost nothing on affordability, that is making our housing more affordable, childcare more affordable and accessible, healthcare more affordable and accessible. A couple of bills related to cancer, but way too little. And as I said, nothing on our water. We finished up in on the Senate side on Monday with wholly insufficient school funding for the next fiscal year at 2%. So that it's like the answer to the riddle, when is an increase not an increase? When it's lower than the rate of inflation and it's actually a cut. So we also have seen some of our colleagues in the Senate introduce wholly unserious bills to tell us they are not really interested in doing their jobs. They are more interested in making sure that a possible future Governor Sand can't do his. When you introduce bills such as cutting off the per diem for legislators after 50 days when they can't even manage to do what we need to, we're at the 50-day mark right now, more or less. And there is another bill. There's another anti-governor bill that would say that legislators should absolutely abrogate their responsibilities to Iowans, and there would be some sort of continuing resolution should the legislature fail to pass a budget, which it never has. To me, what that says is there is very little interest in exercising those moribund muscles that have to do with working together and across the aisle and for all Iowans. So Look forward to your questions today. Sorry, we're not going to have more to tell you about Dave's visual aid, but can't wait to have the conversation.
Thank you, Senator Weiner. Next, we will hear from Representative Dave Jacoby, District 86.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the forum. Thank you for the visit this week in Des Moines. It was great seeing you. I am Senior Representative Dave Jacoby.
Excuse me, sir.
So what you're telling me is I'm far past my midlife crisis, too. So, thank you. I serve as ranking member on Ways and Means. I also serve on the Higher Ed Committee, Government Oversight, and Natural Resources. Interesting, you know, with things going on, I hesitate to bring it up, especially globally and some of the big bills that we fought off this week. But the number one thing I heard about this week from constituents from House District 88 was car insurance. Everyone's car insurance is getting jacked up in their premiums. I heard a lot from people who have teenagers. Well, you know, your car insurance tends to go up a little bit with teens. But their concern was two things. Trouble getting car insurance in the first place because of the zip code, and also how much the increases were. Those with children 16 to 24 saw a 56% increase in their insurance premiums. And young students who contacted me because we were debating things as far as tuition freezes, I heard from a couple of students who said, well, tuition is a concern, but I don't know how I'm going to pay for my car insurance because I have to drive to work so I can afford to stay here in school. And I said, well, how much is your car insurance? And she said it went from $2,000 a year as a single young woman to almost $5,000 a year. And her car is a 2010 vehicle. So it's a 16-year-old car. And so I called my old roommate in college, happened to be is an insurance guy. And I called him, and he said, yep, I live in Iowa City. Yep, and the problem is, that particular provider is trying to get out of the car insurance business. So they're jacking up the rates as long as people will pay them before they actually dump that line of insurance. So while it's not the biggest thing we're facing, it is something that people are facing every day at home. I look forward to your questions as long as my hearing aids will pick them up.
Thank
and
you.
And we should be good.
Thank you, Senator, Senior Representative. Dave Jacoby. Next, we'll hear from Representative Amy Nielsen, District 85.
Does that make me the sophomore or the junior? I'm still firmly in midlife crisis mode, so I guess that I'm definitely junior. But thank you, everybody, for being here and for everything that you do for us. Really appreciate it. As you've already heard, there's a lot going on in Des Moines, but not a lot to do things to actually help Iowans in their everyday lives. Not doing anything to help raise wages, save jobs, protect property tax relief. There's just really nothing going on that actually helps Iowans. A lot of distractions. I was just looking at the list of bills that we're doing in state government. There's a lot of busy work in here. And nothing really substantive. And I think that's a real shame, because that's not why you send us to Des Moines. And I don't think it's why the majority party's constituents send them to Des Moines. So I'd really like to get something good done and something solid that helps Iowans. We're still a little bit of time to get a leadership bill or a budget bill. And so hopefully they'll slide something in at the last minute that we can all support to actually help everyday Iowans. So I look forward to your questions. I'm not going to take up a bunch of time with complaining about how things are going up there. So
thank you, Representative Nielsen. And lastly, we'll hear from Representative Eleanor Levin, District 89.
Thank you, Kathy. I guess without Adam here, I stand out. I will say having the league members visit this week was just a genuine breath of fresh air. We've really hit into debate season at this point in the House and the Senate, and it can be a whirlwind and it can be kind of exhausting. And so seeing friends from home and carrying your messages of like vitally important subjects that the legislature should be making progress on is really uplifting. So thank you for those who were able to make that trip. I know not everyone has that opportunity. I serve as ranking member on our Natural Resources Committee. I also serve on Agriculture, on Veterans Affairs, on Public Safety, on Education, and on the Education Budget Subcommittee, and then on the International Relations Committee. So I stay busy. I fought some fights this week. I know a couple of you reached out here, heard me on IPR. We had a couple of specific bills that I wanted to mention today that really hurt my heart that passed the House on Wednesday. The first was a bill that puts in jeopardy homeless service providers if they do not kick out or report to the police immediately someone who is using or distributing drugs on the premises. The bill as written was not only bad, but really dangerous because it would have required domestic violence shelters and children's shelters to put up big old here we are, come find us signs. I was able to get an amendment into the bill that took away the extremely dangerous part of the bill, and now it's just a bad bill that we sent over to the Senate, so still not thrilled about that, but that felt like a small win. We also had a bill that passed that day that will get rid of the Johnson County Community ID. This bill attacks the only two communities in the state that have implemented a community ID. I reached out as far and as wide as I could think locally to see if anyone had anything negative to say. Law enforcement, social services, county attorney's office, citizens who use the community ID, county services. No one I could find had anything to say but good about the benefits we've received from the Johnson County Community ID. And yet, our Republican colleagues passed it on to ban that program. That makes me furious. It's against local control, it's against public safety, and it's against the kind of welcoming community we want to have here, and it makes me nuts. So thank you all so much for your advocacy, for your work, and very excited to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your updates on the legislative issues. At this time, we'll begin questions with one from the League, followed by questions from our partner organizations, and then members of the audience. Our partner organizations today are Sierra Club, 100 Grannies, Iowa City Climate Advocates, and Food 7 Water Watch. Are there other organizations present today that I did not mention?
Where are you from?
Okay. Other organizations? Okay. We would like to remind all participants that questions are limited to 1 minute. Please observe this time limit so that legislators can address as many questions as possible. And Maureen will help you with that. Legislators, please limit your responses to 2 minutes. Our timekeeper will use cards to alert speakers when time is about up and when it is up. Then we start throwing food. No. When alerted, your time is up. You may finish your sentence, and then we will move on.
Staff, let's not do that.
All legislators are welcome to join in responding to each question. So let's begin. Here's our question from the League. Data centers in Iowa would be required to submit regular reports on water and energy usage under House File 2447. The bill, which advanced with full support from the House of Commerce Committee, would also require utilities to put data centers in a separate class of customers so that the cost of powering data centers is not passed on to other customers. Do you support this bill, and do you expect that it will pass?
Will actually pass that.
It passed Commerce. It's not.
Oh, it passed Commerce.
Hasn't come to the floor yet.
I don't think any of us. Are you on Commerce?
I'm not on Commerce anymore.
None of us are.
None of us are on Commerce anymore, so I haven't seen it, but what you just described sounds like a good idea to me.
It is definitely something that my caucus would support. We filed a bill on the Senate side that is very similar, that seeks to hold residential customers harmless for rate hikes in the event of data centers being put in, so that they would not bear the cost of additional electricity generation. So I know that if that bill gets to the floor, gets off the floor, gets over to the Senate, I can't tell you what's going to happen, but certainly my caucus would support it.
Yeah, not serving on commerce, I don't know the full details of the bill, but I have been hearing about this one from folks from home, and I am generally supportive of the idea. I will say, given that this is being floor managed by our own Representative Lawler, this is a great one for folks to reach out on and let him know. We would have loved to hear him describe in depth how this is moving through the process.
I think it's a much-needed bill. My biggest question now is, well, you know, sometimes the problem with politics is it's too darn political. Oh, have I said that before? I'm sorry. I forget what I say in my old age. But my question will be to the legislature. Is this something we're going to actually debate on the floor, or are we sending a message
right to
local governments in terms of what dollars they're giving away or investing for the data centers? And my question has always been the same for the data centers, is there's a cost in building, a cost in upkeep, but how long are they lasting and how long do people actually have jobs?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now we will go to our partner organizations' questions. Please line up at the microphone and limit your question to 1 minute. Identify yourself and what organization you represent. We will begin with the representative from the Sierra Club.
Yeah, thank you to the League for hosting these forums, and especially the Environmental Forum. Thanks, Dave, for your prop. It is in the water, and there's a lot of crap in the water besides crap. and one of the things that's in there is PFAS, forever chemicals, and that's one thing that a data center can add additionality to. Because when it cools, you know, those things that they cool have a coating on them similar to Teflon that has forever chemicals. I'm going to leave most of the water questions to our friends at Food and Water Watch. I'm here to talk about renewable energy siting. We've had a real problem across the state, which I've done for 4 years. I've made a living siting wind and solar farms. We've had a couple bills about citing them on a statewide basis, one in the House, one in the Senate. They're not really great bills, but they're not bad. I'd like to hear what you have to say about renewable energy siting, and that what for folks that is siting a wind and solar farm using statewide standards instead of county by county standards. Thank you very much.
Well, before you leave the mic, Mike, can I kind of turn it back?
Sure.
What do you hear? Because you're at the Capitol often.
Yeah.
What are you hearing on site distances?
Well, one of the bills has a little bit too much setbacks. 3,000 feet for a wind turbine is a little too far. One of the bills has like an opt-out clause in the Senate that basically allows a county, if they hold a public hearing, to get out of statewide siting, and then they can basically do what they want. And a lot of the counties are saying, we don't want wind farms, we don't want solar farms, so they can opt out. But what we have found, research shows that just came out last week, that 26% of, or a county that doesn't have wind or solar pays 26% higher property taxes. Wind and solar farms reduce your property taxes because they bring in a lot of money that reduces your property taxes because they put so much money back into the county. Two-thirds of the Iowa counties are losing population.
What was that number?
Two-thirds.
No,
26%.
26%.
In your opinion, does wind power cause cancer?
I'm going to say, if I consult the president, the answer scientifically is no.
Okay, well, no, I think, and it is, I say it in jest, but
yes,
there are at least a handful of House Republicans who have face-to-face, told me that.
Yes.
That their concern is that wind power is a major cause of cancer in Iowa. Yeah, I know my answer.
Right, we have the internet, and there's a lot of false information on the internet, and the Koch brothers and other fossil fuel interests have a well-organized and well-financed campaign to stomp their foot down on renewable energy, and it's working, unfortunately.
Iowa's really benefited from renewable energy, especially from wind energy.
Yeah.
I am on the whole, I am a huge proponent of local control, but I am also, in this case, I am supportive of these efforts so that you can't just willy-nilly say, no, we can't do this anywhere in the state. You talked about this opt-out clause in the Senate bill. If you or any of your colleagues have amendments you would like run or added to that bill, let us know. We can never run them directly on the floor, but sometimes we can talk to our colleagues and convince them to take the amendment.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from 100 Grannies.
Morning. Deb Schollerman, 100 Grannies. Thanks for being here. My question is a little bit is related to the water, the data centers and the water. So according to what I read, they have to submit water usage, their sources, efficiency reports, and blah, 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 3 to 6 months. And it sounds like, I think it's a decent idea. However, in Indiana, in 2025, several Indiana counties enacted or recommended a 12-month moratorium on new large-scale data centers. These pauses are driven by community concerns regarding excessive water usage, strain on power grids, potential impact on utility rates, and noise pollution. That's a long shot, but is there any conversation about a moratorium on the construction of new data centers in the state?
I've heard those conversations happening at the county levels, but I have not heard any conversation at the state level.
Okay.
And we've heard more about concerns at this point of possible hikes in electricity rates, yeah, as opposed to what's happening with the water, since they appear to be moving toward closed loop water systems. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's incredibly important that we fund the state hydrologists and so forth to complete the studies of how much water we have, what we have in our underground aquifers,
right?
Where we stand with all that. But I haven't heard anything about moratoriums.
Yeah. So I bet I think those are good. That's a good first step.
Yeah,
the bills that have been proposed.
Since Representative Zabner is not here, I think we should mention that he's been working on a bill that would he's prioritized a bill that would. I'm going to try and get this right, so I'm not going to get into the details, but it would essentially require counties and cities to be transparent with the tax incentives that they've offered to data centers, so that if there are impacts on our water and energy resources, if there are impacts on our energy costs to the locals, we can see and we can all really know how that happened, where that came from.
Okay.
Thank you. The next group we will have a question from is Iowa City Climate Activists.
Advocates.
Advocates.
Thank you.
My name is Peter Rolnick, and Iowa needs more electric power, will need. Mm-hmm. And we can provide some of that by using the untapped power in our electric vehicles, batteries, and solar panels, reducing demand on the grid. And this could lessen the need for more power plants and thereby reduce costs to customers. So how do we move forward with this? How do we cut through the red tape getting in the way of these needed improvements?
Now, I don't think it's red tape we got to cut through.
Yeah.
I think we got to cut through the stuff.
So how do we cut through this stuff?
Because nationally and statewide, there's a movement or a pushback or a denunciation of electric power, especially with electric vehicles. So I think our fight right now isn't quite where you want it to be. our fight is to get back to the playing field of that electric generated power is as valuable, or if not more valuable, than our fossil fuels. And I also don't know what that's going to take for us to get back to square one where we should be on that.
I would say in Iowa we need to re-put in place our independent IUC now and make sure that they are charged with not with looking out for ratepayers and for Iowans, not so much for corporations. Because our utilities, the commission now, right? It changed from board to commission.
Yes.
I keep getting confused about which one it is.
Yes, yeah,
the Iowa Utilities Commission has not, in my opinion, been looking out for Iowans.
And I would simply add as a piece of that, that the major companies here, Alliant and Mid-American, it should be a matter of course that power that happens to be generated by a home, by a solar array, if it's more than you need, ought to be able to be sold back to the grid.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Food and Water Watch.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from Food and Water Watch. So a recent poll from Global Strategy Group indicated that 72% of Republican voters in Iowa would be more likely to support a candidate who makes clean water a priority, including in regulating industrial agriculture. Republicans. So all of our bills regulating CAFOs and the factory farm industry are dead. But appropriations is still alive. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the appropriations process and specifically funding. There's a $600,000 annual funding that's needed for the water quality monitoring system that has nitrate sensors in rivers around the state. And it's based here at the University of Iowa. So what are the chances of that getting through? How are there any key dates? And what could folks in this room do to influence people around the state?
I just want to start by giving credit to Diane, who brought an amazing little, visual aid to the Capitol. And it was my most shared post of the past, month, was just taking a picture of that graphic and sharing it because I thought it really laid out the fact that it costs, is it 32 cents per person in Iowa to fund the water quality sensor network? And it was a very effective visual, so I wanted to give credit there.
Oh.
Who wants to talk appropriations? I don't want to.
I'm just full of good news today. Let's go back to the polling. I think if anything happened from 2016, is it shows us that that polling doesn't necessarily transfer to votes. If people truly were voting for water quality, public education, and other issues that are important to us, then I think the trifecta would be in the Democrats' hands right now. Now, as far as the 600,000, I have to let you know that a couple of the Republicans on the Senate side who I've done panels with are totally against putting any money into water measurements, water sensors. They say, why don't we just use 100% of the money to clean up the water. Now, the simple question is, well, how the heck do you know where the water needs to be cleaned up without sensors or some kind of measurement there? So there's going to be that pushback. Also, the budget is an unbelievable mess. I have been around a while. This is the worst budget I've ever seen in 22 years. The use of one-time monies and the pushback of certain things that the state should be covering is coming to a fruition this year. So I hope and we will all fight for that 600 grand because it's the right thing to do. But it's going to be a tough year as we get into March and toward April, especially after the March REC meets, the Revenue Estimating Conference. That will tell us exactly the pot of money that we'll be working with.
I agree with Dave. It's really the lowest of bars to continue to fund that, and yet the putting together, we currently have a $1.26 billion budget deficit this year, just the governor's budget alone. For the next year would put us in another $1.2 billion deficit. That means our colleagues are planning to balance the budget with one-time funds out of taxpayer relief money. So it is indeed a mess. But the water sensors are really, from my perspective, the lowest bar. They allow you to see, like I've talked to the folks in Des Moines, they say, well, you know, it allows us to know when we have to start up the nitrogen system because we can see what's going on. It allows us to know when we're going to be able to shut it off. And then we can also tell people when the levels are low. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what's going to happen. But
I would just add, as you're advocating for this, just remind our colleagues that this is not new money. In 2023, $500,000 was moved from IQIS to IDOLS, was moved from the IIHR, the University of Iowa, the Flood Center, to IDOLS, the Department of Ag and Land Stewardship. We just need to pull those funds back. It's not new money. That's the $500,000, and then we're just asking for $100,000. All they're asking for is a $100,000 increase to fully fund IQIS. And so I would just remind our colleagues that in 2023, those funds were moved to IDOLS. They need to be returned to IIHR, to the Flood Center.
Thank you. And our final question from an organization comes from Cafe Iowa Can.
My name is Eileen Fisher. I'm representing Clean Air for Everyone Iowa today, and I have a solution for part of your problem. So there's a bill, House File 2406, which the Iowa Health Initiative is supporting, which will increase the tobacco tax by $1.50. That will do two things. It will reduce the number of teenagers who are getting on the vape wagon, and it will help smokers quit. If the governor's proposal were to move forward, she would cut another $1 million from the tobacco prevention program, which is already so low that it's barely functioning at $4 million. She would cut it to $3 million. Yeah. She had a bill that would increase the tobacco tax by 0.67 cents, which anything less than a dollar per pack does not help smokers quit. And that's the purpose of increasing the tobacco and nicotine tax. So please support that bill.
I'll just say that $1.50 number is not getting pulled out of nowhere. It's coming directly from the Iowa Cancer Consortium and from the Holden Cancer Center. That's what they are telling us we need to do. There's a similar bill that came from House Democrats that I'm a co-sponsor on. I imagine that some of us up here are. I just don't want to speak for anyone else. That number is not some magical made up. That's what we need to do to help improve lung cancer rates and other smoking related cancer rates in Iowa. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now accept questions from the audience. Audience questions can relate to today's topic of water quality or any other item of interest. Please make a line at the podium to ask your question, and remember to limit your question to 1 minute. Questions will be posed to all legislators. All legislators will have the opportunity to respond to each question and will have each 2 minutes to respond. Out of respect for all present, please do not interrupt speakers. And so we begin.
That's a first. That's a first.
Good morning. My name is Pete Damiano from here in University Heights. A comment, or kind of a heads up and then a question. With the combination of Department of Human Services and Department of Public Health, the public health side has very much been diminished, both in visibility and funding, to the point that right now they're going to be cutting out a teeny program for vision screenings for kindergartners and third graders in the schools, which, again, if you're thinking about their future education, we've been evaluating that program for the last 3 years. It costs next to nothing, but it seems like they're just going through and scraping up any dollars that they can. So just want to put that on your radar in public health in general. Question, there's also, with the nationalization of politics, as you know, outside groups that are submitting bills through the legislature that people have never really seen on different issues. And I'm just curious if you have seen any this session that sort of jump out to you that that's not a local, that's not a constituent issue, that's not really not a local issue, and nationalizing things. Thank you.
I mean, I think the one that essentially came from Texas is the bill that has to do, that's on both sides. Well, it was on both sides of the Capitol, but I think it's still alive in the House on making it very tough to get mifepristone and applying penalties.
Well, this is a record year in the legislature for the number of bills that have been filed. And to date, because we're halfway through the session, the number of subcommittees that we've held. I will also add to that subcommittee comment that the party in charge has gone to a system of not holding subcommittees for all bills, which is the key step for the public to have input. So I think, and that's something that we see on the national level too, other state legislators skipping steps to get the bills to the floor. So regardless of content, the public is not getting any input on those bills. I would have to say out of the 680 bills, I believe it is, that we've kicked out of subcommittees and committees, that I'd say a third to a half of them have a national tint to them. They're not original language. They're not original ideas. So it and I could probably show you examples in every single committee that these aren't Iowa ideas. These aren't Tiffin, Iowa ideas. These aren't Coralville, Iowa ideas. These are ideas that have played out in other states already.
I'm just saying, it's really notable when you go to a subcommittee on a bill and either no one speaks in favor of the bill from the lobby or the public, or the only person speaking in favor of the bill is actually just outright from a national think tank, and everyone from Iowa is speaking against it. And I've had that experience more than once this year.
Sort of on a related note, not specifically national bills, but sort of a national topic of DOGE, which was taken up by the governor, there are this coming week, on Monday, I think, in the Senate, a number of bills that will from local government that will be up for debate that really are bad bills for local government. And the senator who's running them has not been very open to amending them or making them better for local folks. So I just urge everybody to pay attention to the local government bills that are being run, because they're not going to help us govern locally.
And Eleanor mentioned that I have never seen so many fancy suits in the lobby. And that usually, it's sad, but it indicates someone who isn't from Iowa. It indicates someone who flew in on a plane for a couple days and wants to talk to you about a few things, then they fly back out.
I'm Tony Wobiner, and I have a question regarding the efforts that you're making in terms of gun control, and the concerns that I've been aware of in efforts to try to restrict creating automatic weapons in and around in Iowa, but also to protecting our students in school to not allowing guns on the playground, and was wondering if you've had any actions or any hearing any thing that's going on in regards to that. And also just want to thank you for all of your efforts to continue to stand firm with what we need in Johnson County and Iowa.
I mean, I can look up bill numbers for you. I can't recall them off the top of my head, but there were two bills that were run through the Senate in debate this week that came through Judiciary, both of which have to do with guns, clearly not gun control or gun safety. One is a bill that would take away a prohibition that's been in place since 1990, when now Senator Tony Bisignano helped negotiate with the NRA to get certain things done, including a waiting period. I'm forgetting what the name of this thing is. So it is basically a piece that you can buy, that anybody could buy off the internet for $50, install on your AR-15 yep. or with an Allen wrench and turn it into a Gatling gun. And none of us see any value. It's not a bump stock. It's similar to a bump stock, but it's called something else. I can't remember what it's called offhand. Anyway, that passed
forgetting stuff comes with age.
you're absolutely right, Dave. I'm right up there with you.
Sorry.
In any event, it's both in the category of bills we don't need and nobody's asked for. No hunter has asked for it because it does not produce a weapon that anybody could use in hunting. It's not a weapon that would be good for self-defense. It's not a weapon that's really good for anything, and it's cheap to make it, a lot cheaper probably than making a bump stock. The other bill that passed on the Senate floor has to do with guns in various places in the trunks of cars, and I will say at least it was amended to prevent it from to make it so that it's still not legal in parking lots on campus and in schools because
we have that bill in the House.
Well, it was right. Well, it was amended to make it less bad. It's still bad, but I'm glad at least that they took off the school and Regents University parking lot. So those have been through debate now in the Senate.
Yeah, we had a bill passed at the Education Committee. It has not shown up on a debate calendar in the House. And I was not the member on the bill, so I'm not going to get too far into the details. But it does provide for school staff to carry, for example, on a school bus. And it has provisions in there around parents not having to make sure that firearms are unloaded and in the trunk when they do pick up and things like that. And it just... The constitutional amendment that passed in 2022 makes a lot of these conversations just that much harder. I really think that we don't even hear from folks who are working to protect Iowans and specifically protect Iowa kids from guns the way that I've been told we used to, because I came in the same year that the constitutional amendment was put in place.
And by the way, that's a national bill that we're talking about right now on the guns in the school lines.
Yeah.
So that's not one that was originated in Iowa.
Thank you.
Morning, Melissa Serenda, Iowa City Litter Crew. I brought my own visual aid. You can see just before I came here, I spent 30, 40 minutes out at Whispering Meadows Wetland Park in Iowa City just picking up cans and bottles. And you probably can't see, but like 80% of this bag is water bottles, not covered by the bottle.
Yeah.
I know there's no appetite with people in power to fix our bottle bill, but it's an effective piece of legislation strengthened and expanded to include water bottles to increase the deposit. It should be a quarter if it had kept up with inflation since in the 50 years since it was originally passed. I guess my question/comment is, what can we be doing to convince people that it does need to be fixed and expanded because it works, and I don't want to be picking up 200 water bottles every month like I've been doing for the rest of my life.
Well, we had our first review of the bottle bill this year in fiscal committee when we did the changes 2 years ago. That was supposed to be an annual report. The report was baloney. But we did learn a couple things from the report that the DNR came back with. Because a simple question was, how many bottles and cans, and I'll group everything together right now, are being redeemed? Well, the answer was 50%. But the 50% wasn't the number that are being redeemed. The 50% are the number that were redeemed and recycled. In other words, we do that monthly drop-in at our, at the garbage dumps and see how many cans and bottles are there. So what we're figuring out right now is just over 50% of cans and bottles are even accounted for through redemption or through recycling or through being thrown away. So I think we're at a point right now where we have to decide one of two things. Are we going to keep the nickel deposit, or do we go to a dime and make it worthwhile for people to collect or and return those items? And how do we make it uniform across the state for everyone to have the option to redeem them? Locally, we're doing better than other areas. Locally, we could do a lot better.
And we've seen some positive, in the industry, we've seen some positive positives recently in terms of the cleanliness, the speed of processing different like mixed materials that are qualified for the bottle bill all in one location. I mean, now at the new can shed location on my side of town, you can take a bin of mixed redeemables, dump them in the bin, and it processes. You don't have to have a separate bag for each thing, which I'm going to admit is going to save me some room in my garage. I follow the IC Litter Crew on Facebook, and I am always impressed with the work that you all are doing, but I also wish you didn't have to do it. There are also, I mean, we've just got, I think it's in North Liberty that just got the new CanShed mobile deposit site. And with the changes to the bottle bill that were implemented in 2024, there are fewer places for folks to redeem across the state because those who accept the, take the deposits are no longer required to also take those back and give back the deposit. That's been a big problem across the state. We are lucky enough here to have kind of an institutionalized setup for redemption, but that's not been the case across the whole state. We had a bottle bill, a teeny tiny bottle bill this year in the House Natural Resources Committee that just would have made basically all the non-carbonated versions of the exact same thing, same can, same deposit. And we couldn't even get that through the Natural Resources Committee. I thought we were going to have it, but we didn't. I think that reminding folks, same can, same thing is a same can, same deposit. Reminding folks, I mean, honestly, I think the best thing that people could do would be to take a bag of 200 bottles and drop it on the doorstep and say these were picked up in your district over the course of 30 minutes on every single state representative's front porch.
Please don't do that to me.
Yeah. We're all on board.
Yeah. Robin.
I'll come help pick them up.
And I want to thank people in this room. There's four people in this room, and I don't see Linda Schreiber here today. Mm-hmm. But four plus Linda kept pushing the fiscal committee to meet because by law we were supposed to meet before the session started. But because of you advocating, it really did help force people to say, hey, it's in the code. The committee has to meet. I think we could have done a little more in-depth study on the bottle bill and where we sit, but at least holding the committee gets that information out there. So I really want to thank you for sending those emails.
Good morning. I'm Jenny Wunderlich. Thank you very much for being here. Your time is so valuable. Thank you for serving at our state. I wondered if there's anything happening, if you hear about it, talking about water quality, and this topic can be really sensitive, so I want to be aware of that. I've walked through with family and friends who have had miscarriages, and they're increasing, if you haven't watched. And one of the things related to water is there something being done monitoring the disposal of the abortion pill, two-step, mifepristone, and misoprostol, like, hey, how is that being disposed of because from according to our local water source, they don't have a way to assess it, like being in our water. And so is there anything that you know that's being done to help assess that so we can protect all of us here? Thank you.
It's not something that I'm aware of or have heard of at this point.
Well, as I stated earlier, the Republicans at this point do not want monitoring of waters. So that's key, not only for everything else. That, you know, in 2008, we learned a lot of stuff. As someone who was in hip waders catching sandbags, and I will say I was catching sandbags from the Iowa football team, I had to walk over the guys and go, could you please just hand them to me? I can't catch those 50-pound bags. But what we learned non-scientifically of what was in the water, and what was in the water not only came, you know, before our urban and rural divide, what we found out is so many areas in the state of Iowa have septic tanks that aren't sealed, septic systems that are way too old, or not septic systems at all. I think if we want to narrow down what's in the water, then we're going to really need to keep the water monitoring through the flood center, but we also need to be able to do the testing in those waters more often. And I'm afraid that's one thing I'm, again, worried about, that the House and Senate Republicans are saying, no more do we want to look what's inside it. We just want to use the money to clean up the water, and we'll save money and clean the water. And that doesn't make sense to me.
I'm going to jump up here. Brad Friedhoff, Johnson County, Corville here. Question, we are working so hard, and there's a lot of claims that we're trying to do things for water quality, but we had a buffer bill in the state of Iowa that had a lot of bipartisan support, yet it didn't go anywhere. And I don't know if that was a funding thing, but there seems to be funding for the governor to buy a private jet, so maybe some of those funds could be reallocated. So why did that not go anywhere, and are there any chances to do any of those things to help a farm economy that's really being crippled right now and getting these conservation practices on the land and helping them at the same time?
The buffer strips really seem to be a bipartisan answer. As somebody who used to pheasant hunt quite a bit, those buffer strips are where we used to, after high school, we would go walk down the creek beds and stuff for 20 yards where they had some brush and cover. I cannot tell you exactly why that bill isn't as active as it should be. I think it does have something to do with an organization who believes in 100% productivity versus buffer strips. That would be mine. And I would never disclose who might have sent those letters for the fiscal committee, but thank you, Brad. but no, that thing, I really, that's one of the top three things I was hoping we get through this year. I don't think it's totally over yet, but it certainly could have made it to the floor a lot easier.
I mean, one of the things that went about the different funnels in the legislative session is if the party in charge wants to get something through, if it wants to amend a bill, if it wants to add something to some fiscal bill or a budget, they will always find a way to get it done. So it's never, in terms of the session, it's never too late to continue advocating. Just because it looks like it's dead, nothing's dead until we gavel out at the end of the session.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Terry, and thank you for serving and thank you for being here. I'm asking for your experience and your advice that could help us. I am a resident of Iowa City and just moved back about a year ago from Des Moines, where I was an employee and lobbyist for Des Moines Water Works and for the Iowa Environmental Council. And we did have success by, in the off season, meeting with one-on-ones with our Republican colleagues and talking about things like private wells in rural areas, grants to county monies, maybe lead service line replacement, maybe updating the Iowa Water Plan, which hasn't been updated since 1978, which would help with data center planning. So what's your success right now trying to do those one-off meetings? And then could we, I just joined the league too, so thanks to all the league, but is there a way that we could have small group meetings and invite you and our Republican colleagues somehow and just have these small group one-off meetings to try and build some relationships maybe during the summer? So thank you for your experience and advice.
Yeah, I think those meetings can be incredibly effective. In fact, I would hazard a guess that such meeting that was held by the Holden Comprehensive Cancer Center and Iowa Cancer Consortium is the reason that we're seeing a Republican-sponsored bill to increase the cigarette tax this year. I would say the biggest thing about organizing those meetings is that in the interim, we're all still trying to live our lives, and so giving us some lead time is really important. When people try to organize and say, like, we want to have, you know, 12 to 18 legislators come in, and can you come next week? That happens a lot. You'd be surprised how often people say, hey, we have this opportunity. We want you to come. And I'm like, oh, this sounds great. I've already made my plans for next week. Yeah, I would say it's tough because in an even year, our committee assignments are going to change. And so sometimes people want to wait and they want to invite like the members of the relevant committee to meet with them, but then we don't get our committee assignments until late November or early December, and then all of a sudden you've got a week to organize things. So I do understand how that happens. But I just wouldn't wait. I just would invite folks, and if they're interested, they'll put themselves on the list. And if there are certain people who seem to be, you know, pursuing certain committee assignments or leadership placements, I would just go after them and say, we want to make sure this works for your calendar.
Well, I don't have a life, so I would look. I think the small groups would be fantastic. But yep. Jennifer, thank you for two things. Des Moines Water Works kind of reminds me, like myself, being the oldest in the household. I was the first one, oldest child. You know, my parents wouldn't let me drive till I was 17. And then by the time my youngest brother drove, they were handing him the keys at age 14, saying, get the heck out of the house. But what I'm saying is Des Moines Water Works led the way in terms of letting people know what was going on with the water in Iowa. And you mentioned it. You mentioned it too. The Iowa Water Plan, has it really been updated since 1978?
Yeah.
Something about, like, I think it's, I don't know if it's that long, but it's quite.
I don't think it's been updated since then. And it seems like maybe that would be a bipartisan thing where, because it's going to benefit ultimately all the counties by doing a comprehensive water plan about where the water is. Because, like, data centers are better placed in certain areas and not others, like around aquifers and so on. So, I mean, I think it might be something that would appeal to all parties, but
yeah.
I think you're right there. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tanya. I'm from North Liberty. And I just wanted to follow up. I've talked with a few of you. With regards to the manufactured homeowners organization that submitted a bill earlier this month with regards to out-of-state investors buying up mobile home parks and jacking up the rents and putting regulations on them for rent raises and accountability for the quality of the properties that they own and the rent to people that actually own their homes and making things affordable, which is important to everybody, I think, in the state.
Our entire caucus signed onto that and filed it as a caucus bill together. For a hot second, we actually thought there was going to be a subcommittee on it. And we thought that was going to happen twice over the course of the week that preceded the first funnel. I was supposed to be on that subcommittee, which is why I was paying very close attention. And it got so close to having a subcommittee that a clerk for one of my Republican colleagues sent out a notice to the three of us and asked for everybody's free times the next day. And we all responded, and then radio silence. And we went and asked, and they sort of tap danced. These are your homes and you all have a right to your homes and not to have the rents on the property jacked up, not to have your services degraded, not to have horrible water, not to have your land subsiding. And we'll see what happens. Again, it's something that we will probably look at using as an amendment to some bill that comes through that's related. But really, in the year where everybody, including some of our Republican colleagues, keeps trying to talk a good game on affordability, they had the opportunity and they missed it purposely.
Thank you for trying.
Also a very powerful lobby, the state companies.
Good morning, Senators, Representative. Thank you guys so much for hosting. Originally from Mount Vernon, Elijah, been in Iowa City for the past few years. Love Iowa City. Down on South Gilbert Street, my question is, we talked about government closer to the people. We talked about finding where we can get funds for certain projects. We talked about a couple of those things, and I'm just curious about how as a community, as a constituency, we can play a role in the rulemaking process that seems to be passing on costs to Iowa City. I don't know of ways in which I can get involved in that process, and some things that are being moved along. Over in Des Moines is like there's sprinklings of that.
Do you have an example of a rule that's affecting fees and stuff in Iowa City?
Yeah, I think that there are so many of them that I'm not familiar with all of them in specific examples, but when looking at it just intuitively from a structure of, you know, how I'd like to grow up in the government in which I'm living under, I feel like that's something that I being civically engaged could be involved in that process in some way, or have help from the legislative body in which we can are closer in contact. Mm-hmm. To.
Sure, because I sit on the Administrative Rules Review Committee, which deals with reviewing the rules that come from, you know, legislation or departments that then go. Then they have to be implemented, and that's by the rules process. And Dave also used to sit on there. Thank you so much for the seat, Dave. So I think maybe if we could just sit down and talk about it, because it's complicated and intricate, and some specific questions, and would help give you the answer that I think you're looking for. So, yeah.
Well, thank you guys for being here.
And thank you for that question. What comes to mind quickly is, you know, they're trying to re-regionalize our mental health system. And everything I've seen from the maps they keep drawing, redrawing, means we in Johnson County keep paying the tax base and we keep serving people from outside our county. Now, that's a tough position to be in, because we in Johnson County feel mental health as a very important piece of individuals and family life. But it is come to a crisis now where almost half of the people we're serving that we're paying for as Johnson County taxpayers come from outside our county. So we have to look at the state saying, hey, we provide services, and it's tough to get services if you live in Johnson County. Look at the wait list. Look at the number of professionals that are trying to provide those services. So I'm a little frustrated that we continue both for mental health, both for legal purposes and other things, that Johnson County taxpayers are footing the bill for Cedar, Washington, and Iowa counties. And so I, to your question, it's kind of the long-winded way back to it. This is a way that Johnson County residents are paying for services that other counties should be paying for too. And those things come through rules.
And that's not the only field where that's happening. Our Veterans Services Office is also phenomenal. And, I mean, it's a staff of essentially one and two halves, I believe. And they are serving folks from across the state because a lot of our vets come here to get health care. And that's how they get connected with the veterans, county veteran service commissioner, or county veteran service officers. And so they don't get extra reimbursement. Actually, we stay tuned on that. But they don't. There is no additional reimbursement for our county VSOs if they're serving someone from outside their county. And our county disproportionately serves folks from other counties.
Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Emma Skelly. I'm a student here at the university. I'm studying environmental planning and environmental science. I just had a couple quick questions about what are the approaches you guys are using for water quality and how you're discussing that. I mean, we've all talked about, you know, there's monitoring. We're showing that there's increased nitrate levels, increased pollutants in our water. We have people from both rural and urban areas saying that water quality is an issue. So what are you guys finding is the most advantageous way to bring up these bills in legislature and talk about these things? Because it seems like it's always just at a standstill.
Well, I can tell you we raise it all the time, one way or another. And I can give you an example that would be comical if it weren't so sad from this past Wednesday when we had a number of bills up for debate that really have nothing to do with anything that Iowans want or need. And at a couple of bills in succession, a couple of my colleagues said, instead of focusing on this, why don't we work on water quality? Why don't we work on, you know, name your other topic? And the senator who was running one of the bills, Senator Rosenboom from the Pella area, said, I've heard this twice now. You want me to talk about water quality? I'll be happy to talk about water quality. But then he didn't. I happen to know that Senator Rosenboom thinks we're doing just fine and that we almost got treated to a long exegesis on why the things that we're doing or not doing are entirely sufficient. And we're making this all up and it's an anti-farmer and an anti-ag and we all know that's not the case. So really one of the most important things we can do is talk to people we know in more rural areas, talk to farmers, talk to other people who are not in the urban areas and get them to continue raising these issues with their representatives and senators.
Oh, I don't know where you were during the 2010 vote for IWell.
I was 5 years old.
5 years old. And maybe that's what sparked your interest in kindergarten.
Yep.
But my point is that that's how long we've been arm wrestling over this. That the voters in Iowa said, yes, we want the 3/8 cent to go to water quality, go toward the environment. This, to me, would be an optimal year because of two things. Because of the critical need we have for our environment and our water quality, but also, quite frankly, the complete mess that the budget is in. It's just, it really is in a world of hurt. But what a great answer. If there were to add a penny sales tax, then 3/8 of that would go to what you're interested in, we're all interested in, and then you let 5/8 go to help balance a screwed up budget. I mean, that's for the voters to decide. But we could still initiate a 3/8 cent too. We have the technology now, honest to gosh, because of young people like yourself who know how to handle this and know all about computers. Back in 2010, we're going, we don't know how to do 3/8 of a cent. Well, guess what? Now we do know how to do 3/8 of a cent, and other states can do that. So I think, and thank you for your question. I love seeing someone interested in this, and I would push for the 3/8 cent right now.
Yeah, I think from my perspective as ranking member on natural resources and working with some of my colleagues who in the House Democrats who wanted to put forward like a water quality package this year, we have big conversations about, you know, is it a package of small individual bills that would each make so much difference? Or is it, you know, from my perspective, I think that the best thing we can be doing is picking a few cornerstone topics, the 3/8 cent for IWell, funding the trust, the Natural Resources Trust, Water Quality Sensor Network, so that we know what is going on underneath our feet. And then connected to that, funding our aquifer studies that the State Geologist's Office has been working on. Because again, because we haven't had historically an oil and gas industry, we don't know as much about our resources under our feet as most states do. And then I introduced, I worked really hard to get the language right and reintroduced a new version of the, I'm calling it the Aldo Leopold Amendment. It's a right to a clean environment, constitutional amendment, self-executing. These are kind of some big pieces that we talk about and bring up because we know that Iowans across the state value their environment, value their water, value their ability to live in a clean world and not think that their daily existence is killing them. And then on a more nuanced level, it's talking about, you know, these individual bills that actually come before us, whether it's, you know, in-house natural resources, we passed a bill that will allow for a pilot program, or it basically will expand water well monitoring through Iowa Flood Center and the State Geologist's Office. It's not a great program because private wells aren't the greatest source of information because we don't have all the detailed information we would have if we just did a test well, which is cheaper, more consistent, and better data. But it would help us to expand the knowledge we have about well water across the state. And so we just look for those opportunities to make good, tiny strides forward. But on the big picture stuff, we just have to keep saying these are the things that Iowans are asking for and being upfront about that.
I also introduced a bill that we may use an amendment at some point that would expand DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, ability to wield a larger stick in the face of spills and so forth. Right now, they can fine $10,000.
Thank you, guys.
I'm Sonia Ettinger. Oh, excuse me. Under grannies. I would just mention, sorry about my voice, that hopefully everybody knows we have an election coming up for the Secretary of Agriculture, and Chris Jones would greatly help discussions about water quality if he were elected. That's one story. but on the subject of electing, is this legislator talking about safety of voting. Voting is supposed to be state, but we see all sorts of other comments being made about bringing birth certificates and heaven knows what. So I just ask, are we discussing voting safety?
Yep, there are a couple of bills in state government that address that. We had one through. We voted on it on Friday, I think. Friday or Thursday?
Thursday.
Thursday, yes.
I was here on Friday.
The days all seem the same. It could have been Tuesday for all I know, but or Saturday. A couple of voting bills, not nearly as bad as we've seen in the past, but still not great. We'll continue to say that I don't think that the majority party is really interested in the safety of voting as much as voter suppression. I'm honestly just glad that we didn't see bills as bad as we've been seeing them the past 10 years. This year, they're still not good, but yes, trying to require people to bring more forms of ID to the voting, to the voting place. Taking away things like a testing, same day if you come and register and you don't maybe have a utility bill, because a lot of our, younger students especially don't necessarily have a bill, they're paperless. And so having somebody that says, yes, this person is who they say they are, they live where they say they live, and they can vote here. Having that ability is really important. Under penalty of law, that you will be charged and probably found guilty of a crime if you attest that somebody is who they're saying and it's not true. So things like that are slowly being kind of wiped away. We've just been bombarded the last 10 years with horrible, horrible voting bills. So nothing about safety, actually. More about just making sure that less people can actually vote.
Don't worry, a really bad bill is coming your way from the Senate.
Great. Thanks, Janice.
It was actually a league member who pointed out to me on that attestation bill. Here's hoping that when an Iowan who has to drive 25 or 30 miles to get to their polling place has to drive back home to get their ID, they think twice about who they voted for.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Just a reminder, too, that I'm speaking for myself as an area Democrat. I believe in voter ID. The biggest problem is what counts is that voter ID and the number of things that don't count. I mean, I was appalled years ago when my father was still alive that he couldn't use his DD-214 at the polls. I go, well, what? Because it didn't have an updated picture.
It doesn't have a picture.
And so, and I don't know why all us Jacobies look the same anyway, but no matter if we're 60 or 80, but that's where the big struggle is, what counts. And I remember one of the first things that were X'd off the page was student IDs for the colleges they were at. Well, it just keeps moving the goalposts on how much stuff you have to bring. We're all going to have to bring a handbag with us with all the levels of ID that we need. But it does really stop people, especially people around my dad and mom's age for a number of years, who they stopped driving. Well, they had a driver's license, but it was expired. But it's still them. It's still the address they still lived at. I mean, every little thing that we keep putting up a barrier to people walking through the line to vote, that's what really worries me.
Yeah, and I believe you can use your concealed carry card, but you can't use a student ID.
Unless it has an expiration date on it.
So it's a little convoluted, to say the least.
A little skewed.
A little bit.
Hey, Sue.
Sue Dvorsky, Coralville, and I just want to say, in the light of all of that, contact your county auditor and volunteer to be trained to work these elections. The league are the leaders for this, but all of us, the only way, we can only do what we can do in the space we're in, you know, as John Wesley famously said, for as long as we can, where we are, and where we are, and what we can do is work those elections. It is not a hard, it's a long day, but it's not a hard day because what you're doing in there is making it possible to send you to do what you do for us. So whenever you get really, there's a lot of things happening that we really individually can't do very much about, but what we can do is push back this notion that voting isn't safe, and the way we do that is we overwhelm the polling places with volunteers. If you speak Spanish, if you speak French, volunteer, please. If you have, and the facility with a computer is really not that necessary.
And just
I can even do it.
And so, just to be clear, being a poll worker is not a volunteered position.
It is not.
It is a paid position.
Yes, it's a gig. You get paid. I think Eleanor and I both worked the local elections.
I don't want to go again. Anybody else has a question. So speaking of national shenanigans, New York and Vermont and a couple of other states that have serious people in charge have passed make polluters pay bills to hold the fossil fuel industry accountable for the damages that they're experiencing now of climate change. Well, if you look at a map of the largest greenhouse gas emitters in the country, where all the dots are, the dots in Iowa, most of them are ethanol plants that are the largest greenhouse gas emitters. So the ethanol industry has bills in the legislature right now that would basically grant them immunity from climate lawsuits. Now, none of these lawsuits are happening yet, mm-hmm. but in 10 or 20 years, especially if we have a constitutional amendment that says we have a right to a clean environment, there might be folks with standing who want to sue Big Ag, the ethanol industry, for climate damages. It's not totally hypothetical. If those bills get a floor vote, can we count on Democratic opposition to those bills?
It came to the week, or was on the debate calendar. On for Monday?
Well, I'm not a fan of immunity bills for, but you know, when it comes to Roundup and others, I think it's kind of goofy, but I don't know if that'll reach the floor or not. I certainly hope not.
And I'll just say, because I'm the only person here who's voted on it already, and I actually voted yes in committee because it was a pretty limited bill in committee, but then we got an amendment on it that takes me from okay to hell no. So just FYI, if it does come to the floor, I will be a hell no.
Mike Carberry again, and I'm taking off my Sierra Club hat and putting on, I don't have my Johnson County hat with me. And thank you, Eleanor, for bringing up the community ID. When I was a county supervisor, it was one of the most proud things I ever did, other than raise the minimum wage and put 5 solar arrays in Johnson County, was the community ID. Our state legislature takes great pride in doing 2 things: punishing Johnson County and putting silly bills up like bringing the Chicago Bears to Iowa. And as a lifelong Minnesota Viking fan, that really pisses me off. I would like to have each of the legislators either name your silliest bill that you've seen this year or bill that punishes Johnson County that's not the community ID bill. Thank you very much for your service. You all rock. Go Johnson County.
I'll do Johnson County. I just spoke against a solely anti-Johnson County bill this week that that one of the other people who should be here always tends to run the anti-Johnson County bills, and that's Senator Driscoll, which basically would demand that when the governor orders that flags be flown at half staff, everybody snap to attention or risk having an injunction from the Attorney General. Let me count the ways, including free speech. But anyway, it's Johnson County. And if your bad Johnson County bill gets to the floor, my intention is to excerpt a piece of the video that a conservative Republican supervisor in Woodbury County, which is Sioux City, made last summer after Caitlin Dre was elected to the state Senate, which talks about why legislators need to not be paying attention to things like what the heck is happening in Johnson County, let Johnson County fend for itself, and work on serving their own constituents.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I know of 2 very silly bills. One of them is that we annex Galena.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because in Coralville now is a retired Illinois DOT gentleman who met with me. We met for coffee. He goes, "Do you realize the agreement between Iowa and Illinois that every other bridge is each other state's responsibility? So the one in Galena happens to be Illinois. So if you annex it, you got to fix the damn bridge." Mm-hmm. I go, "Well, thanks." And of course, an engineer would be technical and tell me which bridges were which. The other silly bill is that Johnson County can secede from the state. Oh, wait, that's my bill. And I plan on offering it once or twice in Ways and Means because as much as we benefit from the state of Iowa, we contribute a lot to the state of Iowa. It is a quid pro quo, and I think as much as we get our eyes poked, that people should realize how much we, the university, the private businesses, all the community members contribute to the state.
They stole mine. My was that we were going to annex parts of Illinois. But another one, I think, is the constant the constant push to require a certain percentage of Iowans be admitted to various programs within the universities, because I sit two seats down from John Wills, and he stood up and talked about how, you know, he knows this one person who did really well on their ACT and was a good, had a good GPA and all of this stuff, and wasn't accepted into the nursing program, and it's just because they were from Iowa. They had to accept somebody else. And that is so not the case, and it's so not what's happening. And I'm so tired of these one-off situations that happen, and they get a hold of a legislator and say that they were in some way harmed by not having some other restrictive rule in place. So those are the really silly ones to me, I think. Other than annexing Illinois, and God forbid, I don't want to be a Bears fan either. Yeah.
Kind of, I will admit, this, annexing the western counties of Illinois was top of my list. There's also a new raccoon bill. It's slightly less silly than the one from 2 years ago, but it's still pretty dumb. It would allow killing raccoons all the time on public property, private property. It's absurd. And dangerous, just in case that was unclear. I mean, honestly, Senator Green's no-fault divorce one, ending no-fault divorces, is also dangerous and also silly.
Unfortunately, it died.
It did die yes, in the final? Okay, good. I thought so, but I was not 100% sure.
Well, as dead as it can be.
Right. There's a list. Education bills, we always have 9 or 10. Okay, so I will mention one other education bill. It's, right, okay, so this is actually a terrible bill, but also funny. This would impose a statewide dress code.
All right.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Which is laughable, but also freaking dangerous. We had a member of the House Education Committee actually talk about how it was so important to her father, who was poor growing up, to be presentable for school, that he went to the river and washed his clothes every night because he only had one set of school clothes. And when someone asked, are you suggesting that our students wash their clothes in the raccoon river right now? her response was, I suggest they do what they need to do to be presentable for school. Can't make this stuff up.
You really can't.
You forgot to add that the raccoon bill is $5 for every tail
that
turned
was the
in.
Old one.
So I had a dream. I'm in natural resources, and we ran that a couple of years ago. I had a dream that night that there were 1,000 raccoons that looked like Yorkies running around with bob tails. Well, the tail.
I don't. So I don't want that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to say something on a positive note, because actually those were kind of funny. But one of the Republican woman who sits in front of me, she's a member of Moms for Liberty, a group that would not ask for my help. But her and I have worked on a puppy mill bill, and it has cleared the first couple hurdles. What this does is it does penalize the worst offenders. Now, there's so much more that we can do, but there is that piece that her and I will argue all day long, and then she'll turn around and we'll talk about dogs. And we have a pleasant conversation, and I think that bill hopefully will reach to the governor. And again, what it simply does is for people who have been repeat offenders, we don't give them a chance to repeat again.
I filed a companion. I hope it moves.
Yeah, I hope it moves in Senate, too.
Sounds like that's been much more productive than when I sat in that seat.
Yeah. Oh, no, I miss you.
I think we have time for one more question. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to pose that?
Hello, Ryan Fosmark. I live in Iowa City. On the note of fixing bridges and finding those sort of positive things that we can look forward to, and bringing it back to water quality a little bit. Maybe, I think I'm fishing for positive here, but Senator Jacoby, you mentioned that our, you know, majority party is not interested in funding, well, I think everybody mentioned, in funding sensors for water quality. But they are potentially interested in using that money to clean the waterways. Is there any common ground there that we can, like, have some traction on and actually get some positive change done, even though we won't know if it worked?
Well, I think the rising cancer rates in the state of Iowa are pushing the discussion. Now, whether or not there's full agreement on the causes, I think, to your point, I took it as half negative, half positive. It was Senator Rosenboom who said that in a forum, that he is not interested in investing money in monitoring, but he wants to invest money in the cleaning of our waters. So that is a positive. Sometimes I come up with ideas in the middle of the night going, why don't we have a toll bridge going into Costco? And if your license plate doesn't say Johnson County, we charge you 25 cents. And it just went, and we put that into our water, clean water fund. And, you know, I brought it up, and just I go, and then the other day I was at Costco, and I'm walking through going, yeah, out of county, out of county, mm-hmm, out of county. We just raised a dollar. but I think on a positive, it's hard to say, on a positive note, our cancer rates are up. On a positive note, the recognition of the cancer rates and how it's affecting everyone may be the driving force to get to where you are in terms of, is there a bipartisan way to start cleaning up our waterways?
I have one thing. I don't want to get too ahead of myself because this bill got pulled from debate on Thursday from the debate calendar. But Representative Golding and I, who represents rural Linn County, have worked together last session and this session. Currently, the DNR, when they are looking at water use permit applications, there are two conflicting definitions of beneficial use that have led to a state in which the DNR has never turned down a water use permit. Ever. Because everything fits into one definition or the other. We have had a lot of different versions of this bill now. The one that we were expecting to see in debate on Thursday on the House floor is not, in my opinion, the best possible version, but it would address the problem of the conflicting definitions and it would improve the situation so that the DNR could actually turn down water use permits when, like, I don't know, for example, North Dakota wants, like, a company from North Dakota wants to take a bunch of our water to North Dakota, which is just bonkers to me. But that's what one of the water use permits requests this past, in 2025, was for. So I am hopeful that we will get that bill to the floor. I know there was some concerns in the Republican caucus, and I'm trying to work with my counterparts, but I've had really great conversations with a whole slew of Republicans on that particular topic, and they're seeing it more as a water quantity issue, right? These are folks who maybe saw their well level drop in recent years or are concerned that they will as data centers come in, and I'm kind of like, if you want to come at it from that end, great. Love that. Let's work together. So let's just get there. Exactly. So I'm hopeful that we may actually be able to give the DNR a teeny tool that they need this year. It's a little, but it's something.
Our thanks to all of you, those with questions and those with responses, for an informative session. We will conclude this forum with closing remarks from each of our legislators. Legislators will have 3 minutes for their remarks. We will start with Senator Janice Weiner.
I don't have a lot to say. I think most of it has been said here. Thank you all for coming. And thank you for highlighting these issues. There's just one issue that I'd like to touch on that we haven't talked about, and that's the layoffs at Whirlpool in Amana. March 9th, 341 people are losing their jobs. This is a plant into which there have been substantial state funding and subsidies put in. Their promises have been made. They're unionized under the machinists. The Senate Democrats and the House Democrats together at the urging of Senator Tom Townsend put together a joint letter to Whirlpool saying, please, think again. Please keep these jobs in the state. Please don't send them to Mexico. These are real families. About 50% of the folks at Whirlpool are from Linn County. Only about 2% are from the Amana area. Others come from Johnson, Iowa counties, and so forth. This is a pattern we've seen repeated. It's happening with Case in Burlington as well. We need to really pay attention, because one of the things that we keep pushing on is don't give free rides or money to the corporations if you're not going to claw it back when they decide to fire workers or not do what they said they would. And then I'd add in the fertilizer plant down in Fort Madison and under that, which was supposed to break the monopoly of the Koch brothers, and now the Koch brothers own it. So let's these families are going to need a lot of support. We're going to keep pushing to re-expand unemployment from the 16 weeks that it's been brought down to go back to the 39 weeks when there's an actual plant closing. We need to pay attention to all the workers who have been earning decent wages and are now really going to be struggling. So thank you for coming. Thank you for all you do and for continuing to pay attention.
Thank you. Next is Senior Representative Dave Jacoby.
I'm going to come to the next meeting wearing a toupee.
That will be.
I didn't promise. I want to thank you for being here today. This is really a great way for us not only to let you know what's going on in Des Moines, but more importantly, hearing from you what's important to you and what you think you're hearing coming out of Des Moines. Janice touched on it. It's a huge concern of mine. The number of WARN notices. WARN notice is a notice that goes out if there's a layoff of 50 or more people. In the last 14 months, there's been more WARN notices than in any 14-month period since WARN notices were put into effect. That affects our state budget as much as the tax cuts, agree or disagree. The biggest hit to the state budget right now is the fact that someone, you know, the near 1,000 people that are laid off at John Deere, someone working in the foundry making $85 an hour, is now working a job trying to support his family at $11 an hour. Well, her tax liability for state income tax is much less than it was when she was earning $85 an hour. We're seeing that in manufacturing. We're seeing it close by in the Amanas. And Jess also touched on it. While I cannot stand the fact that locals are losing their jobs, I really hate it that we're paying companies to move them. Now, that's just plain goofy. Coming up soon will be property tax discussions. There's 3 or 4 different levels in the House and Senate and the governor's office. Your input is always so very important. I will fight, as always, to make sure that we have subcommittees on each one of these bills. And we'll fight to make sure that we get the information out to you as succinctly as we can, too, as fast as things move. My goal is that so we have certainty, so you know what your tax bill is going to be in the next couple of years, so there's not exorbitant hikes. But I also want to make sure that we can afford to pay our public safety, afford that we have rec centers, afford our parks, stuff that's important to us in Johnson County. So the tax bills are pretty complicated, but without your input, something could sail through that has effects on people that we don't want to see. And as I said a million times too, when property taxes, you always talk about rollback. The only thing that rolls back are people's eyes, because we're tired of hearing about it, and over the last 13 years, nothing has been effective. But thank you so much for the meeting today.
Thank you. Representative Amy Nielsen.
Thank you so much. My eyes roll back all the time, every day. Well, most of the time when I don't even need to hear rollbacks when I'm up in Des Moines. But thank you again to everybody for being here. Thank you to the League and all of the organizations that took the time to think up questions to ask us. I think one other thing to add on to what Dave was saying about the property taxes is for certainty, for knowing how much you're going to But also certainty for our local governments to know how to build their budgets. That, you know, it's not easy to build a city budget or a county budget or a school budget when you don't know how much money you're going to be getting. So that's just a small addition to the to what Dave was saying earlier about the importance of knowing your property tax liabilities. Other than that, I just hope that we continue to kill some of these really crazy bills, these silly bills that are coming through that I really wish that the majority leadership would just kind of stand up to some of their members and say, this bill is dumb. We're not going to waste our time. We're not going to waste our colleagues' time on these, but they won't. And so we continue to show up to subcommittees that, well, they always schedule the dumb ones. They don't necessarily schedule the important ones. So we continue to show up to these subcommittees and just sit there for 2 minutes and then be like, oh, no, this is not going to advance. Never mind. So I really wish that would end. We just don't have time for that. It's disrespectful, quite frankly. So that's kind of my big complaint this time around is let's just stop wasting each other's time. Let's stop wasting the opportunity to do good things for Iowans, and let's actually get to work and do something. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And Representative Eleanor Levin.
Thank you all for taking your time, and to those who are watching the streaming or watching this, you know, at 2 a.m. because you're trying to fall asleep. Hopefully you didn't fall asleep because it was so wildly interesting. I would just say, because the topic of this forum was water and the environment, every single human being, whether they work at the University of Iowa, as so many of our constituents do, or whether they work as a seed cleaner, or whether they work in tourism in Mason City, or whether they work, you know, in the home and are, you know, working 100% online these days, every single one of us needs water that's healthy. Every single one of us needs soil that's viable and not being rushed down the Mississippi River. Every single one of us needs breathable air. And so fighting for a clean environment is not an attack on anyone, because it's for everyone. It ensures that we can all have a healthy future for generations to come. It ensures that we can all have a state that is safe for us and allows us to grow rather than wither. And so I really want to say how much I appreciate the leadership shown by folks who are in this room and folks who are not able to join us because it happens to be, you know, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. on a Saturday morning across the state, not just in Johnson County. We have so many people who are stepping up to say, every single one of us, farmers, teachers, case employees, every single one of us needs a clean environment. And we have to keep saying that, and we have to keep bringing people into that conversation. So thank you all so much.
Thank you. In closing today, we would like to thank the local AV staff for recording this event and live streaming it on the League's Facebook page. Rebroadcasts of this forum will be run on Iowa City Channel 4, Coral Vision, YouTube, and North Liberty TV. See their respective websites for programming. Our League's March Forum has been canceled due to the conflict of No Kings events. However, we do have some parting gifts. On the table in the back, you will find the most recent directory of all state legislators, their contact information, and committees. Communicate with them.
Use it.
Thank you all for coming today, and a special thank you to our legislators. Thank you for coming and sharing your thoughts on a busy Saturday morning and the continued work that you do on our behalf. Thank you so much.